all love a good sweet treat now and again, but what about a sweet treat that doesn't make you completely regret the calories? My guest today went through a tough journey of ups and downs with chronic pain to then finding out she had hip dysplasia. During her rebuild, she not only created a foundation to advocate for others going through what she had gone through, but also birthed an amazing protein ice cream company called Frosty Flex. With that, welcome Leslie to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Thank
I'm
you
so
for coming.
Excited.
Yes, I know. And I like, you know, when you've reached out and I looked into your business, I was like, oh, I love the concept because I am an ice cream girly and I, you know, just learning more about you on your page and everything, I think you have a really inspiring story and I'm so excited that you're here to share it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So I would love, of course, to just jump right into ice cream, but you definitely have a journey that comes before all that.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with that. And if you can just jump right into explaining a little bit of like where your journey starts in 2018, mm-hmm. When you started undergoing some health issues and you then found out that you had hip dysplasia as well. So
yeah.
If you can start there when you when your journey began with all of that.
Absolutely. So in fall of 2018, I was working at Barnes Jewish Hospital at the time as a nurse anesthetist, and I had never had any health issues. I was very blessed in the fact that I was healthy, never had experiences with chronic pain before. And in fall of 2018, I was at work. And the best way that I can describe it is I was walking to my next case, and anybody who's been inside the hospital at Barnes knows it's massive. And I had like a 10-minute hike to get to my next case, and it felt like my sock in my foot on my left side was wet. Like, that's the mm-hmm. best way I could describe it. Like, the sensation to my foot felt weird and off, and I had never experienced anything like that before. Mm-hmm. And I kind of blew it off. I'm like, okay, I got to hurry and start this case. By the end of my 12-hour workday, my whole lower back had this diffuse, heavy, incredible amount of back pain. And it radiated to like my buttock gluteal area and kind of wrapped around my left hip and my thigh. And I had a lot of what I would describe as like neuropathy symptoms below my knee. And I was like, what in the world? I thought I had hurt my back. I thought moving a patient, I had hurt myself in some way. And it was concerning because I had an incredible amount of pain and I had never had that before. And at the time I was seeing a chiropractor just for like basic preventative things that we all do, just for aches and pains. And I had texted him. I said, hey, I'm having this like incredible amount of butt, back, left leg pain. I have no idea what's going on.
Wow. And as you're a nurse,
yeah,
so you're thinking like, oh, this is just routine, you know, I've been on my feet too long.
Yeah, or I thought I had like a herniated disc or something like that. And the next morning he got me an appointment to do an MRI of my back. MRI looked totally normal. And I was like, what is going on? So my sister at the time was a physical therapist and we were trying everything we could do just to get me comfortable. And the weird part of it, too, is, like, I had a lot of sensation changes to, like, my rectum and, like, vaginal area. And so I definitely felt concerned about whatever the issue was. I just had no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. So we worked on some, like, basic exercises, heat, things that just could get me comfortable because everything bothered me. And in the meantime, I had made an appointment with a physiatrist. And a physiatrist is a physician that specializes in pain and rehabilitative medicine. And my hopes was that they could at least help guide me on a path of what could be going on. So essentially it took, from the time that my pain started to the time I could get in to see a physician, it took me about 2 months, which anybody who's accessed healthcare knows that it takes time mm-hmm. to get in to see a specialist. And I got in to see a nurse practitioner with the physiatry department here in St. Louis. I won't say the specific location. They did x-rays of like my hip pelvis area. Mm-hmm. And the nurse practitioner that I had seen said there was nothing on the films that was concerning and that she wanted me to see a physician that was within the practice that was very versed in female pain. I got in to see her 3 months later. So in this meantime, I was just doing massage, physical therapy, and I...
And this is a pain that's, like, constant.
Constant. Wow. Like, it affected everything. And, mm-hmm. like, walking, sitting. At that time, I was extremely active and in shape, and I couldn't even walk into the gym. I was in so much pain.
Oh, my gosh.
It affected...
And this is... You're still working during this time, too?
Yeah. So 12-hour wow. shifts, still taking care of patients, still putting people to sleep for surgery, still moving people. And I was just honestly miserable. And even more so, I was worried about what was going on and not having any answers. Mm-hmm. So that was like the hardest couple months for me because I had never experienced anything like that. And I felt extremely lost in the whole journey of it, even though I was a healthcare provider and I felt like I should have access or the knowledge to figure it out. It was a hard couple mm-hmm. of months for me, for sure.
It is a lonely feeling. I had experienced myself with not really getting like a diagnosis. And so I know what you're saying. Like it is a lonely, like out in the cold feeling because you're like, I feel horrible and like I have no mm-hmm. answers of why, you know?
Yeah.
And
The unknown is definitely difficult. So I finally got in to see the physician that was a physiatrist and, she was like, I think what's wrong with you is that you have what's called piriformis syndrome. And the piriformis muscle is this large muscle that runs within the butt. And the sciatic nerve kind of runs, depending on the person, it can run like in between or around the muscle. And she's like, I think it's tight and it's causing irritation of that nerve and it's causing all of your symptoms. I said, okay, cool. And she's like, I think we need to... do an injection of a local anesthetic into the muscle. And if that helps with your pain, then we can try Botox within the muscle to help it relax. So naturally, it takes another 2 to 3 months to get in to see her for the local anesthetic injection. And it did help.
It's crazy to me what Botox is used for sometimes.
Everything. You can put Botox in anything, it seems.
Literally. Because my mother-in-law actually had a treatment done for her, her neck. It's like... I want to say it was like for her neck and her head.
Yeah.
And she had Botox done for that to like help with the headaches, I think it was, and stuff. And I'm like, what?
Yep. So, it's amazing.
That's crazy.
So it did help. It didn't take away all of my pain. It didn't improve my quality of life. I still felt I was struggling to do activity, to do the things that I liked. Work was hard. And so I felt like we were kind of in like a little bit of a standpoint, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And in that period of time, I had to do a minor procedure with my gynecologist. And for that procedure, they did a injection of a local anesthetic into the cervix. And she's like, you know, you might be uncomfortable for the next like 12 hours and have some cramping. And I felt incredible. Like that was the best I had felt.
Oh, because it numbed everything.
It numbed everything. And I thought, that's really weird. And part of me was like, is there something within my pelvic floor that is causing all of my pain? Because it literally took away every single bit of pain that I had. And I, in addition to the pain, I was having urinary symptoms. So frequency, urgency.
And do you have children?
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
I don't. So no kids. So 2 weeks after...
this can't even be anything related to childbirth or
anything. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I had no surgeries before that, so nothing that would have reproduced these issues. But I saw my physiatrist a few weeks later, and I said, hey, I had this procedure. They did this injection into my cervix, and my pain was gone mm-hmm. for the time that anesthetic was on board. And she's like, that's interesting. She's like, I want to refer you to a pelvic floor physical therapist. And I think every female, whether they've had child, gone through childbirth, have had lower abdominal surgery, or just experienced urinary, bowel, sexual issues, should see a pelvic floor physical therapist.
I have been hearing this more
and
more.
Incredible.
Yeah. Especially for women who have had children. But yeah.
Men too.
And like fitness women, like women who are mm-hmm. lifting heavy. Like it's huge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for a consultation to kind of go over basic things, because a lot of things that I think we just accept as normal, mm-hmm. they aren't. And I think that there's the ability for somebody that has a specialty in that area to help. But anyway, I got in to see her. She worked in South County and amazing. We did an assessment. She asked me a ton of questions about like bowel and bladder, sexual health. And then she did an external and internal examination. And with pelvic floor physical therapy, with the internal, they assess the superficial and then also the deep muscles of the pelvic floor, or the bowl of the pelvic floor. And on exam, it reproduced every single bit of pain that I had. It was, and I thought, like, that was the first time where I felt like maybe we're finally getting somewhere. Like, I felt like I had hope for the first time. And so we did, I want to say, if I remember correct, weekly visits with her. And then she gave me like exercises and yoga stuff and things to try to help relax my pelvic floor. What she had found is that most of the muscles that was causing pain for me were hypertonic or really tight. And the tight muscles is what was causing a lot of the pain and dysfunction that I was having.
Do you think it was like compensating mm-hmm. for your hip?
So at the time, I didn't think that. Like, oh, okay. I had no idea. I had never known anything was wrong with my hip. I never had a family history of hip issues. And I thought, well, maybe everybody just kept telling me to relax. So like, oh, it's because you work out, you lift, you're stressed, you hold all your stress within your pelvic floor. I feel like women in general, people tell you just need to relax and not be anxious and it'll fix everything. And I truly felt like for the first couple months, that's what it was. Like, I was like, I just need to fix the way I'm reacting to stress. I need to do the therapy and the exercises and I'll get better. Well, I was in pelvic floor physical therapy for the better part of a year. And I was doing medical massage. And the best way for me to explain how I felt is that I would go into a visit feeling terrible. I would leave feeling amazing. My pain was definitely decreased. And then by the time I drove 30 to 45 minutes to get home, my pain was exactly the way it was before I had gone into my appointment. So to me, I felt like I was finally at a wall again. Like, hey, this is helping, but I still don't think we've found the original issue, if that makes any sense. It's like, it helps, but I immediately, 45 minutes later, I'm back to square one again. Mm-hmm. And the even more frustrating part was not having answers, but spending a ton of money to try to get better. And I felt like we were just in this big circle of where do we go next? So at that time, I had switched physiatrists because I felt like we were not getting anywhere with the first physician. I switched physiatrist and she was like, I think we need to do an injection within your hip with local anesthetic to see if that helps with your pain. And it's more of, it's not meant to be like a long-term pain solution. It's more of a diagnostic, like, mm-hmm. hey, is it coming from your hip? So in the meantime, my pelvic floor physical therapist was like, hey, she's like, you know, I'm stumped because I feel like we're helping, but it's not giving you long-term relief. And I don't want you to just keep coming to physical therapy if we're not finding like a long-term solution for you. And she's like, I really think you need to talk to Michelle. She's one of our physical therapists here within the office. She's like, she's our hip guru. And she's like, I think it would be helpful for you to see her, have her assess you, talk to her, and get kind of a game plan of where we can go next. So did the hip injection, did help with my pain. In the meantime, I saw Michelle and I feel like for the most part, this was a period of almost 2 years, 2.5 years that all of this had happened. I maintained a lot of emotional composure, maybe not at home, but like in visits, I felt very like I went in with a plan. And at that visit, I broke down. I was frustrated. 2.5 years, I had seen between physical therapists, physicians, chiropractors, I had seen more than a dozen people. And I was just frustrated. And I was honestly, I worked in a system that I felt like was failing me. And I didn't understand that. And in that visit with Michelle, she asked me a ton of questions. We did some movements. And she really kind of like felt my pelvic hip area. And she's like, I can feel your femoral head, or the femur is that long leg bone. She's mm-hmm. like, I can feel the top of it almost like popping in and out of your hip socket.
Oh my.
She's like, you ever feel that before? I'm like, well, it like pop. I've felt it pop before, but you just think things are, that's just how it is, right?
You get used to the norm. Yeah.
And she's like, I want us to like see each other and work together and try to get you more comfortable. But she's like, I think in the meantime, I know that you're seeing a physiatrist, but she's like, I think in the meantime, you need to reach out and get an appointment with Dr. Clohissy. And he's an orthopedic surgeon, primarily does hips at Washington University here in St. Louis. And somehow I got an appointment the following month. Like it generally takes 3 to 4 months to get in to see him. And I feel like it was just a sign for everything to come together. My physiatrist also ordered an MRI with an angiogram where they inject the hip with local anesthetic to kind of help light it up to get a better idea of what the cartilages look like within the hip capsule. So we did that. I saw Dr. Clohissy, and he did 3 different x-rays of my hips. He looked at my MRI and he said the MRI showed that I had a hip labral tear. And the x-rays showed that I had hip dysplasia. And ironically, the x-rays that I had in 2018 showed the hip dysplasia and never was caught. So it was a little frustrating, but neither here nor how. So the x-rays showed hip dysplasia in particular. The form of hip dysplasia I had was called acetabular retroversion, which essentially means the hip socket, instead of facing forward, it's more facing backwards. It grew that way. And what that essentially means is that the femur head was like moving in and out. And those muscles of my glutes, the muscles of the pelvic floor, the muscles of the lower back, everything was tightening to try to keep that femoral head within the socket. Wow. So it's like the body's way of like, hey, this isn't right. We're going to tighten.
Yeah.
We're going to keep that in there. And at some point it tightens and it tightens and it tightens and it tightens and it causes pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then it causes dysfunction because everything is tight and not able to move appropriately, which was causing my pain. So everything kind of finally started to make sense.
And when is this? So like this all started in 2018. So when is this that you finally got some answers and it all clicked?
February 2021.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So 3 years of like question marks after question marks and wow.
Yeah, it was quite something. He was like, you know, I want to do a 3D scan of your hip. He said essentially you go through a CT scanner and then we create like a 3D model of your hip. And he's like, once I have that, I can kind of give you a recommendation on how to proceed. But he's like, you know, you've done all the things, you've done therapy, you've done massage, you've done injections, you've done all of these things. And he's like, if we can help you surgically, then that's what we're going to do. So I had the CT scan done, followed up with him. And that's when he was like, you know, your hip socket grew abnormally. And then he said, in order for the femur to fit within the hip socket, it grew abnormally too, just by nature, because it wanted to fit within that socket. So he had recommended we do a procedure called a periacetabular osteotomy, and it's massive word.
I was like, blah, 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 blah. I couldn't even repeat that if I wanted to.
So essentially what that means, like the best way I can describe it, is peri means around.
Okay.
Acetabulum is the hip socket, and osteotomy means cutting of bone.
Right.
So they essentially made 3 cuts within my pelvis. So they made 3 pelvic cuts around the hip socket. They removed the hip socket from the pelvis, repositioned it in a normal anatomical way, and then they screwed all the bones together to allow them to grow and heal. And the point of the procedure is to avoid a hip replacement at an early age and to preserve your own normal, natural hip joint. So they also fixed my labrum. They fixed that with a hip scope. And then they had to do, I had some like acetabular impingement as well that they fixed. They shaved down the top part of my femur to get it to better fit. And yeah, I spent 2 days in the hospital. The first 4 weeks after surgery, I was no weight bearing to allow the bone to grow and heal. Yeah, it was Wow. It was a doozy.
So how's your recovery? Like, were you in like a cast or
no cast?
What is that how? I guess it was just staying in the hospital to keep your bone or your whole leg from moving.
Exactly. So the screws essentially kept the bone in place. But the point of no weight bearing is to not allow those bones to move, because even though it's screwed in place, there's still that chance that there's certain there's a one bone in particular that doesn't handle weight bearing that great. Mm-hmm. So the first 4 weeks was meant for me, literally. I didn't have a brace. I didn't have a cast. Some surgeons will do a brace. It's kind of surgeon specific, but he did not require that. And pretty much for the first 4 weeks, I just stayed home. My husband stayed with me 24/7. We had in-home nursing and physical therapy that came in, and I just essentially used a walker to get around the house. I had my first post-op visit at 4 weeks, and they did repeat x-rays, and that's when it showed my bone was healed. So the funny part is that everybody always asks, like, oh, is your bone healed? And I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, you must be fully recovered. And it was the total opposite. It was an insane recovery. I was on crutches for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
It took me about 7 to 8 weeks to get back to driving. I was in physical therapy for 9 months. I didn't go back to work for 6 months. And a lot of people can go back to work earlier, but I had an what I would say, active job. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time. The funny part is when people ask if you've healed, it's like the answer is yes, but it takes so much longer to recover from chronic pain, and then so long to recover and to rehabilitate and to strengthen muscles and to not feel weak. And the one thing that nobody ever tells you after surgery is that my leg felt like concrete. Like, it felt like I was dragging concrete for about a good 6-7 months. Like, it just felt
exhausting. Just your body getting used to the new.
Stiff and it just takes a long time.
Yeah. And then your muscles have to learn, oh, wait, we can go back to normal now because we don't have to overcompensate for this. Yeah. Wow.
I think that's the hardest part, is the pain for so long makes everything more challenging. And I feel like it takes a long time for the brain to process pain as being okay. Mm-hmm. Like, pain is a part of the recovery. It's not hurting you. It's not – it doesn't mean that something's wrong, where for the almost 3 years before that, pain was something wrong. I'm just trying to figure out what that wrong was, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, it was a long
– yeah.
It was a long road, that's for sure.
It sounds – oh, my gosh. I literally can't even imagine – like, not only from 2018 to 2021 when you got answers, but then, like you said, the whole recovery process after that. I mean, your entire life was completely altered for those years.
Yeah, it was hard. And it was hard because the right hip has the same issue. And I think going through that recovery was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was – my husband even says, he's like, well, good thing we have a strong marriage, because it was hard for him too. It was a lot to get over. And I think in my head, I kept thinking, like, what if I have to do this on my other hip and do it all over again? But thank goodness, like, I've been so good.
It doesn't. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Well, that is the silver lining, I guess. Wow. Yeah. So do they know, like, is this just something that you can be born with, or what is the cause?
So there are some people that are born with hip dysplasia. It's congenital hip dysplasia. And most of those people are in harnesses or have surgery or casts at a very young age. There's a small percentage that maybe have mild dysplasia that's missed. And then a lot of people may have some sort of abnormality. And then as you grow, it just kind of develops into this dysplasia. So a high risk, or I guess the average individual that comes in with hip dysplasia, is usually Caucasian, young female, very active, firstborn. And so oftentimes that have a family history. I never have had a family history of any hip issues. Nobody's had hip replacement. Hip dysplasia is one of the most common causes for early hip replacement. It's a precursor to early osteoarthritis. So the way the hip joint is shallow, and the way it's formed, it puts pressure on the rim of the hip capsule, and that can cause issues with the cartilage and degeneration and osteoarthritis, which is a common reason for needing a hip replacement. But I never had any, you know, family history of it, mm-hmm. but I did fit the profile for, I'm firstborn, obviously Caucasian, very active. So I definitely fit that pattern, yeah. but clearly, you know, I think that's one reason why my husband and I started the Mighty Foundation for women with hip and pelvic issues, is because I feel like even though it took 3 years for me to get an adequate diagnosis, you know, it's very frustrating. I felt like it was my place to advocate for the disease itself, mm-hmm. because I feel like in some ways I felt lucky, because the average time to diagnosis for most people with hip dysplasia is 5 years. It takes 5 years for somebody from the start of pain to the time of diagnosis to get that diagnosis. And for me, it was 3 years, and I'm like, well, shoot, 3 years felt like a lifetime, but in a lot of ways, it was a fraction of what a lot of people have to go through. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, in being an advocate, you and your husband also started a nonprofit.
Yeah.
During this time, or was it after?
You know, honestly, the like time frame is kind of a little fuzzy. I think it was like right after. It was somewhere within that period. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so you, with this nonprofit, you serve women suffering from hip and pelvic issues mm-hmm. and chronic pain. Can you talk about that a little bit, you know, what sure. the nonprofit does and, like, what it provides for these women who are dealing with this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I initially, when we started it, my goal was to do the podcast, and my podcast mm-hmm. at the time was called Mighty Talks. And my husband was the first one to be like, I think you need to just start a podcast. And I'm like, I have not. I mean, you know, I'm like, I don't know what to do with a podcast.
Yeah.
He's like, I think it's important for you to talk about. And it was incredibly helpful for me to get through my pain. And I feel like to get from a negative to a positive point with it, where I was able to talk about it, to meet other people. So the podcast was kind of the first part of it. I got to meet a lot of people, bring on therapists, educators, people within the industry that had a lot of knowledge around hip and pelvic issues. So the Mighty Foundation in and of itself, our main goal is to provide resources, whether that be educational or the ability to help people suffering to find resources like therapists, physicians. I think that's the hardest part, is that there are literally chiropractors, therapists, physicians on every single corner within a major city. And how do I find one that's reputable, that I like, that is knowledgeable within the area that I'm suffering? And I feel like our foundation has done really well with helping patients find access to resources and education.
And maybe not undergo the 2 year long waiting period, question mark period that you had. Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah. And giving people the support that, you know, they, like you said, you feeling lonely and not knowing, not having answers. Like, I think that's great that you're providing people a system of support and education, like you said, so mm-hmm. they don't, you know, feel lonely in their journey of pain, hip and pelvis.
I feel like in a lot of ways it gave me purpose behind my pain. Like I tell everybody that is sometimes. And I thought about it when I listened to your podcast with Elizabeth mm-hmm. Tucker, where she talked about this incredible tragedy that she went through. And she was somehow able to find positivity, find peace, and to move on with her life. And I feel like a lot of people can't find the bridge from pain, suffering, and tragedy and find positive out of it. And I think that's why I like to talk about it, is that there's purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like at every point, whether it's chronic pain or chronic illness or grief, tragedy, whatever it is that you're suffering from, the biggest thing that you can do for yourself is to advocate for you, to never lose hope, and to realize that there will be a period of time where you won't have that pain, or maybe that pain is a little bit less. Mm-hmm. My favorite quote that got me through all of the issues that I had was by Helen Keller. And she said, life is suffering. And it is, like, there are so many parts of life that are suffering, but there's also overcoming of that suffering. And I feel like Elizabeth is proof of that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm proof of that. You've been through things. I'm sure that you're proof of that. And I feel like in a lot of ways, it's not the end point that we're proud of. It's all of the messy middle that we have to go through to get to that end point. So if I, by being here today or having the foundation, if I'm able to tell my story and help one person get through whatever down part that they're going through, is to just advocate for yourself, to never give up and to never lose hope. Because I feel like those are things that you can always hold on to get you to the next point. So
I love that. And and really what it is too is like you said, you went through this experience and now you have the platform to help others maybe go through it in a shorter distance than all the things that you had to go through. And I think that is rewarding, you know, for 100%. People who have been things like you, like Elizabeth, you know, because she's doing the same thing with helping people, you know, not go through maybe all the hard learning things that she had to. She's like, here, let me just help you get to the other side easily, you know.
Sometimes you just need a hand to help you get to that point. It's like there's one other person that I know that's going through the same thing, and that's reassuring for a lot of people. In many ways, I wish I would have had that, but I feel like by not having it,
now you can be it for other people.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful story, honestly.
Thank you.
So what is the name of the foundation and how can someone listening find it if they were to want to, you know, either donate or look into it?
So, yeah, the Mighty Foundation is a legitimate nonprofit. It's a 501c3b, which essentially means that you can donate. It's tax refund if you need to have that. But how to find it, it's called the Mighty Foundation. Our website is called Mighty Talks. MIGHTY and then talks.com. And that essentially has all the information of the podcast, who we are, what we do, and it has a way to find us, to reach out to us by email. And if you'd like to donate, that's all on the website. So mightytalks.com, but the foundation itself is called Mighty Foundation.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the name too, because it is what it is. You need to, you're a mighty force for people going through this, and you're helping them in that way.
That's the goal. I've met a lot of people who've had their own journey, and in a lot of ways it's like made me rethink how awful I thought mine was, because a lot of people have gone through botched surgeries or they live in rural areas where they don't have access to care. So it's been enlightening in a lot of ways, to where you realize your situation really wasn't all that bad compared to somebody else's. So
I'm sure, yeah, when you're in that and you're hearing so much more, you're like, oh my gosh. Wow. So what is something that, like, a piece of advice that someone who is going through a similar situation that you went through with your health, in dealing with chronic pain and just not really having answers, what's a piece of advice that you could give somebody, other than, of course, going to the foundation and listening to your podcast?
Yeah. So I think it's inclusive of whatever the issue is. So whether it's a hip issue, or say you have a chronic illness, like an autoimmune disease that's causing you health concerns. The biggest thing that I feel like, as far as advice, is to never stop asking questions. So my first visit to Clohissie, I came in and I felt like my brain and my body were in two totally different areas. I felt like I walked into that visit already kind of having an idea of what he was going to say. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I was almost in shock. And I didn't ask any questions, which is very weird of me. Like, for the most part, I'm pretty informed, and I walk in wanting to know a plan. And I remember leaving being like, what in the world? I didn't ask any questions at all. I just, okay. And so from that first visit to the second visit, I literally walked in, and this is my biggest piece of advice to everybody. Bring somebody in that you trust, family member, friend. If it's somebody you know that's a medical professional that would advocate for you, and say you're a lay person that has no idea idea about anything within healthcare. Mm-hmm. Bring in somebody that you trust, whether that be a spouse, sibling, friend, whomever, and write questions down. So anything that you can think of that you want to know, because I feel like a lot of times physicians are rushed. There's time frames. They're behind. You get in there and they start talking about one thing and you forget all of the 10 things that you mm-hmm. wanted to talk about or bring
up.
I've
been there.
So I literally, that second visit, I came in with a whole sheet of paper and I said, I want you to answer these. And he literally just went down.
Wow.
He's like, okay, you good? I'm good. Next question. You good? You good? I mean, he literally went through every single question and I left feeling empowered. And I feel like...
Because, yeah, most people don't think that they have to, like, prep before they go into appointments like this. But I think it's probably good.
And
coming
from a person who takes care of patients every day, it's weird being the patient. And I take care of people all the time that don't ask any questions. And I'm very much an empowerer for my patients. But ask questions. Even if you think it's a stupid question or you don't know what the question is, if it's a topic, just write it down. And that gives you the opportunity to not have to, like, on point remember it, especially if you're stressed or emotional or the conversation takes a turn and you don't know where to bring it to. So write it down. Bring somebody with you that you trust, like we had talked about. I think that's helpful because sometimes, like with my husband, if I would forget something, he'd be like, hey, you were talking about this at home. And it, like, would re-trigger something. And the other thing is just because – you see a physician, a therapist, esthetician, chiropractor, whomever it is that's providing you a service, doesn't mean that you have to stick with them. If they are not providing you with what you need, if they're not fulfilling your needs, if they're not helping you get to a point where you need to be, it's okay for you to leave and to find another mm-hmm. provider.
Oh, yeah.
I think
just like getting a second opinion, all of it.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways, if I would have stuck with the first one, the first person that I saw, I think the circle would have lasted a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And to tell people that it's okay to see somebody else, to find somebody else, to find answers in another way, this is about you and it's about you getting better. And if that means finding somebody, maybe they're the best surgeon in the country and you just don't click with them. Their personality mm-hmm. sucks. It's okay for you to find somebody else that can fulfill your needs. And
I think this is the thing for maybe a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is you just get kind of like you go to the specialist or you go to the doctor mm-hmm. and you're just like, oh, well, it is what it is. You know, like, yeah, like you said, you should click with them probably if they're going to be taking
and
care
they should
of
listen
you.
Listen to you. I think a lot of times we seek care and there's not a lot of listening on both parties. So I feel like your needs should be addressed. And if they're not, then it's okay for you to find help elsewhere. But those are like my big three things are asking questions. Knowledge is everything. And I feel like if you know the why behind why something's being addressed or why something needs to be done, then it makes everything make sense to you. Mm-hmm. And going through anything alone is hard. So having a buddy and then finding a team that works for you, because at the end of the day, you're never going to get better if the team that you have isn't there for you. So those are my biggest three things I could say.
Yeah, I think
everybody.
Those are great piece of advice for anybody going through any kind of health issues. I mean, I think that was great. Yeah. So it's finally time. I've been waiting. I want to talk about ice cream.
Yes.
And moving on to the creation of Frosty Flex.
Yeah.
And what gave you the initiative to create Frosty Flex and how did it come to be?
So that was part of the hip journey too. My husband,
I love the name too. I wanted to
I know that
Frosty
was,
Flex. It just rolls off the tongue.
I don't even know how we came up with it. I think my husband was just starting to put words together and he said it and I was like, you know, he came up with like other names and I'm like, nah. And then that one
naming
just,
something is so
hard.
Oh my gosh. That is so much pressure to me. Like even naming this podcast,
yes.
I was like, I don't know.
Because it speaks
what?
Everything
like,
about
yeah.
what what you're trying to portray. It's, yeah. it's the image of the company, but yeah.
And you don't want to hate it like a year later. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Or you find something and it's like, oh, it's already taken or it's mm-hmm. too close to something else. But yeah, it kind of was along the hip journey as well. So my recovery was very long. And a lot of that time was spent at home by myself. My husband's a pilot. So once I was able to get to a point to be by myself at home, he had to go back to work. And that meant sometimes 2 weeks with him being gone.
Wow.
And so it was hard spending that much time with myself, especially before I went back to work. Mm-hmm. And we love ice cream. And we really like...
I'm thinking about some right now.
we really like coffee. And so it started with coffee. He's like, how about you just try making a coffee ice cream? He's like, we really like ice cream. We really like coffee. Ooh. Let's do a combo. And it turned out super good. And it kind of segued into protein ice cream. And this was before the Ninja Creamy Instagram protein ice cream craze. Mm-hmm. So we started making protein ice cream at home. And it turned out so good. We would bring it up to the guys at Supplement Superstore in Shiloh, and they all loved it. It was kind of like every week I would bring in a new flavor. It was this fun thing we did for a couple months. And my husband was like, maybe we should start a business. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, like, you're a pilot. I work in healthcare.
When are we going to have time?
How does a frozen food business fall into it? And I ironically was listening to a podcast, and the person was talking about entrepreneurship and building a business and the hardships with it, but like the positives that come out of it as well. And I don't know, something about the podcast just really resonated with me. And I was like, I remember calling my husband being like, I think I'm ready to start. We didn't have the name then, but I'm ready to start Frosty Flex. And he's like, oh, he's like, you mean just like give it to family and friends? I was like, no, I think I'm ready to sell it.
Yeah.
So in June.
You just got to rip. I feel like with any business, it's like the ripping of the Band-Aid off. You're just like, okay.
And I'm an overthinker.
Now it's out. Yeah.
So in June.
Well, and when it's like your heart, you know, you're putting your heart into it. You're always scared of like, what if it fails? What if no one likes it? What if, you know, it's so hard to brave that.
And in that podcast, it talked about your ego being the barrier between you doing something. Mm-hmm. And I never had looked at it that way, but it was so true. It's like your ego holding you back because you're afraid of failure. Your ego is afraid of criticism. Your ego is afraid. It's you're afraid of all the things that really at the end of the day, who cares?
Your future tripping already. Yeah. It hasn't even happened.
Yeah. So in June of last year, we filed the business and we found a kitchen in High Ridge, Missouri to make the ice cream. So it's a commissary kitchen where other companies, food companies can come in and make their food. You reserve a kitchen and that's where it's made. So we bought a Carpigiani ice cream machine and my husband and I make it. We got the whole shebang to do ice cream. So last summer is really when it kind of launched. We found our Mercedes Sprinter van to kind of deliver and sell the ice cream out of. So it's nice. Been...
So you do like house deliveries with it too.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. So it's been quite the journey, that's for sure. I never thought I would be making ice cream and selling it, but here we are.
Are you still in healthcare or is this just all you do?
Yeah. So I backed off after my hip surgery. I backed off to more of like part-time hours. And I left Barnes after my hip surgery. It was just too much to get back to physically. And I do contracting work now. So I work for a few local facial plastic surgeons and I do anesthesia for them. So it's a few days a week. And then I can pretty much work.
A lot less demanding than.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. To make, you know, attention for the foundation and then attention to Frosty Flex. Able because my husband, when he's gone, it's pretty much just me.
Yeah. So are you like, let's just say somebody lives in like California, can they order and buy the ice cream or is it just local for right
currently
now?
It's just local. I mean, we would love to expand it out. It's just incredibly expensive. So if somebody wants
and with
to
ice cream, I'm sure there's so many things. Like you got a logistical pack it in a freezer box of some sort. And
we would love to get it to a point to where we had it in stores first locally, and then to have the ability to get it out more further within the U.S. It's just the cost of shipping is insane right now. And with ice cream, it's like a whole nother level. So
yeah,
currently no, but our goal is to grow. We are just focusing on the local area as of now.
Do you guys do events at all or
this summer? So we literally launched. We decided,
I know it's new, but
So we launched right after Thanksgiving. So ice cream in winter was definitely
this past Thanksgiving, like 23.
Yes. Wow. So 4 or 5 months
ago. Yeah. Yeah. Not
so long. Launching ice cream in winter was interesting. We did wonderful, but it's definitely not the prime time for events. So our goal this summer is to hit up events and markets and all of that to get it out there to allow people to access ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I'll have to keep tabs. Yes. Or like, how does someone keep tabs of like what event you're at?
Yeah. So our social media, we keep updated on events. And then our website is frostyflex.com. And that has information on if you live locally, how you can order it off of our website. And we deliver it directly to the customer. But as far as how to find us,
the events are on your website,
just
where you're going?
Just social media is the best way. Yeah, the website is not quite as up to date. So I would say as far as events, the social media, Instagram is FrostyFlex1. And then Facebook is FrostyFlex. Those are the best ways to find local events.
Perfect. Yes. Well, yeah, and you're coming up on your first summer, so
I know. I'm excited. Hit it hard. I'm excited.
That is so exciting. So I have to ask, because I've been gluten-free for like 6 years now. Do you have gluten-free, dairy-free?
Not dairy-free. So we are working. I'm working on a dairy-free right now. It's a challenge. The thing that we pride ourselves on is our 8-ounce cup has 20 grams of protein in it, which I feel like it's the way I like to look at it is it's a meal replacement. So it's not just eating something that has protein. It's something that could serve as a meal in and of itself.
Okay.
So the thing about it is, and maybe do you eat like vegan protein at all? Like,
I can do vegan protein.
It's been challenging to find a vegan protein that like, that tastes, the texture and the taste is really good in ice cream.
Mm. It is like it's a different consistency because I've done vegan protein before and I didn't love it because of the consistency.
Yeah.
Something was just off.
So I haven't quite perfected the whole, and I don't want to just put a dairy-free option that doesn't have protein because I feel like that's the foundation of our company. And so that's been the challenge, is finding a vegan protein that I'm happy with inside of the ice cream.
Yeah.
So we'll get there. It's a work in progress.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, November. So, it's totally understandable that you don't have all the bells and whistles just yet. So.
Yeah. And I love, like, when you pick up our ice cream, it tastes like ice cream. It doesn't taste like protein. I think, the number one question we get is, does it taste like a protein shake?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at a lot of Instagram recipes and I've tried them and they taste just like protein shakes. So if you pick up our ice cream, it just tastes like chocolate ice cream, or it tastes like orange dreamsicle, or it tastes like vanilla ice cream. It doesn't taste like you're drinking a chocolate protein shake that's in a frozen form. So
that's good, because I mean I drink protein shakes and they're drinkable, but it's not like I'm
not
like,
when you're wedding
yum
dessert.
Yeah, like so that's great that it like actually tastes like ice cream.
Yep.
Makes
yep.
it even better, and then you don't feel guilty eating it either.
That's the goal.
Yeah. So what are the like ingredients that you do put in, you know, to create the quality? And I thought I saw that you used first form protein in it. So
we do. So each of our ice creams that we have a high quality protein powder. We currently do use the first form protein powder within our ice cream. So a high quality protein powder. A lot of ice creams that are on the market, even ones that tout themselves as high protein, it's a very low quality protein that's within it. So a lot of the protein within ice creams is from the dairy, or it'll be from a whey concentrate or a very, like I said, a low quality form of protein. Our ice cream is high quality, low temperature processed, generally whey isolate protein powder. And like I said before, it's around 20 grams of protein powder in an 8-ounce cup. So a Ben and Jerry's is 16 ounces. So our cup is about half the size of Ben and Jerry's. And it has 20 grams.
Yeah, I was trying to think in my head. Like, yeah. Okay, what does 8 ounces look like?
Yeah, so if you got a pint of ice cream, ours is about half of that. Okay. And it's got 20 grams of protein. And I've...
So, like, you eat it in one sitting. It's not like...
Yeah, or, like, my husband and I, sometimes we'll split it. We'll get a cup and just share half of it. So you're getting about, just say, 10 grams of protein in, a, like, a 4-ounce cup, which is, to me...
Yeah, that's... When you're trying to hit that number, yeah.
So high-quality protein powder. We do – all of our ice creams do have dairy in it. Like I said, we are working on a non-dairy, but it's just – hasn't quite happened yet.
That's probably a process. I mean, because ice cream is dairy. So
it is.
Yeah. But I think that's great that you do have plans of working on that. That's – yeah. Because I hear so many dairy-free people are coming out more and more now. So just like gluten-free.
Yep. So – and all of our ice creams are gluten-free. So the dairy – high quality protein powder, and then instead of sugar we use monk fruit and allulose to sweeten it.
It's been hearing monk fruit more and more too, so,
and allulose is kind of a newer one. It's expensive, and I think that's why a lot of products haven't had it. But if you start to look in products that aren't using sugar, allulose is starting to become more popular.
I actually haven't heard of that,
and people have less GI issues with allulose like they do with other sweeteners. And then we use a little bit of guar gum just for longevity purposes of the ice cream. So, but yeah, it's pretty minimal ingredients is the protein powder, the dairy, the monk fruit and the allulose, and then a little bit of guar gum. So it's
so was this just all like research that you just started doing, or did you team up with somebody who helped you with ingredients?
Did it pretty much the recipe formulation or the making of the ice cream has been me. It's been a lot of trial and error at home. And the biggest thing that's been really, really hard is most ice cream gets its creamy texture from sugar. Sugar and or egg within the ice cream helps give the texture of ice cream that we all know of it. So not using sugar and not using it. We don't use egg. Everything, the dairy that we buy is already pasteurized, and if you add egg into it, it has to be pasteurized after the fact, and we've really tried to avoid that after the fact, because once you start heating up protein powder, it also loses a lot of its quality. There's a reason why it's low temperature processed. Yeah. So the dairy we buy is all pasteurized ahead of time, and It's been a challenge, but I've been the one to kind of formulate the recipes, and we've had to tweak it again to kind of get the texture has been the biggest thing. Sugar softens the ice cream, and not using sugar and using other things has been a challenge. So it's taken probably a better part of a year to get the recipe where we've liked it before we launched. So,
I mean, that's a lot. Like, I could not even imagine like how much you had to research to be like, okay, this can mix with this, and this is going to help, like you said, hold it together. And I mean, wow, that is a labor of love, I guess.
It is. We love to cook. I love to cook. And I love to my biggest thing that I love to do is to make something that's ultra indulgent, like ice cream or pasta, and make it healthy and still taste good. I think that's anybody can make like a fattening lasagna. Mm-hmm. Anybody can make a fattening ice cream and have it taste good. It's very hard to make something healthy and taste like an indulgent treat. So that's the biggest thing that we really wanted when we designed Frosty Flex, is to have it be a high quality indulgent treat that still allows you to have a balanced meal, really, like having a dessert and a meal. So
I know I can't wait to try it, and I won't feel bad either, because sometimes I'm like, oh, I want a little ice cream right before bed, but it's not Frosty Flex. It is not good for me in any capacity, or even like you said, it's a whole meal replacement. So you know, that's even better when you get to have that for a meal.
That was our goal. We didn't want to have something that has the same amount of protein as other ice creams on the market, and I've not come across another ice cream of that size that has that amount of protein. So we've been really proud of that aspect.
Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing about your ice cream and just your whole journey. And I love what you're doing with the nonprofit and your podcast. And I'm rooting for you to continue with that, because I do think you're becoming a great advocate for mm-hmm. other people going through that. And I love those type of stories. Like if I can connect a lot of my podcast guests, yeah. I love stories that are people who are wanting to advocate and help people who are going through something that they went through. And so that's amazing.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me here. I've been looking forward to it, and I've been watching all of your podcasts, and it's been a very inspiring show. So I'm glad to be a part of it all.
Thank you. Well, I'm happy you're here. And everybody listening, go to Frosty Flex on social media and website. Can you give those both one more time for anyone listening? The website and then your social handles?
Sure. So it's frostyflex.com is the website. And then our Instagram is frostyflex1. And Facebook is just Frosty Flex. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
That's where you can find us.
Perfect. I know I'm finding them right after this. I just told her before we started, I'm like, I wanted to try the ice cream before you came in, so I had like that to talk off of, and time got away from me. But I will be getting some very, very soon. So
that's perfect.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
As always, I appreciate you all so much for listening. My goal is for these episodes to at least help one person in some aspect of their life. So if you like what you hear, don't forget to follow, like, subscribe to the show, as well as follow us on social media @InsideVoicePod. Thanks.